Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 74, George Lawrence of Merchant Words. Well, you're going to hear immediately this is a different sounding podcast because this was recorded live in Las Vegas. George and I were out attending the ASD conference in Las Vegas, and I was so fortunate to be able to sit down with him. I got to spend time with him a couple other nights at different events and things, and I finally was able to make my schedule meet his schedule because he's busy. And the words of wisdom that he let loose were just incredible. Again, I love the perspective, right? So think about this. He's a little younger than I am. He's in his 40s, late 40s, and yet he's been a computer programmer for a long time. And so we spent some time talking about that and then bringing it current. So let's get into the podcast.
All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. And yes, the voice sounds a little different because this is one of my remote podcasts. I'm so fortunate to meet so many great people as I travel. And I'm in Las Vegas for the ASD conference where you're out here buying merchandise for sale. And I'm very fortunate because I get to meet so many great people. And one that I've met many times, but we've really never been able to sit down, is George Lawrence from Merchant Words. Welcome, George.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
Man, I'm excited to have you here because I've seen you speak a few times at these events, and I'm always blown away. And I'm always sitting there saying, oh my God, where do these people come up with this stuff? And I want to get there. But before we get there, I want to learn a little bit about you.
Sure, sure.
So you are Crazy George, as I describe it. You are Mr. Fun, and you really do enjoy life.
I love it. I love it.
And so you're married with a couple kids.
Yep.
And what I love is last night we were together a couple different places, we seem to be, and ended up on a monorail back together.
Yeah, that's right.
And your wife and my wife got talking, and my wife said, oh man, that couple really gets it. That's pretty cool to have a spouse that just gets it, what you do, and lets you enjoy what you do.
Oh, well, thank you. That's kind of you to say. So, you know, the thing about it is, you know, Jennifer and I, we've been married for, 25 years now, just celebrated our anniversary.
That's awesome.
And, you know, from day one, we've been a team, right? And it hasn't been perfect, and everybody faces challenges, but the thing of it is, we've always been in it together. So, come thick or thin, better or worse, as the marriage vows say, we've always been by each other's side, and that's really helpful, because no matter how awful life gets, and everybody has their ups and downs, it's nice to face it together.
It really is, and you know, again, to have somebody supporting you as you know, especially in this crazy business, because it changes every day. It'll be changed tomorrow. I guarantee you, whatever we're doing, something will change
right,
tomorrow.
Right, sure, sure.
All right, so you obviously didn't start Merchant Words yesterday. So there was a time that you were doing other things. So take us back. You went to college, and what was your first kind of jobs? What were you doing back then?
Well, if you don't mind, I'll take you back a little further than that.
Oh, so wow. Not in the womb.
No. You know, as a kid, I fell in love with video games, but I'm an older guy, so what that means for me is Pong. You know, paddles back and forth?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sure. So I fell in love with video games back as a kid, and man, it just sunk in like, wow, this is some kind of magic. So I promised myself that I would learn how the magic works, and all the way through, you know, middle school and high school, I just was digesting how to write games, right? Video games.
Really?
Yeah, so my parents bought us
What language was it written in back then?
You know, I'll tell you the story. So here it is.
Okay.
My parents bought us, I think it was a Commodore 64 or a VIC-20, one of those early home computers. And it came with this big, thick manual of, like, you know, how to plug it in was the first couple of pages, but then, like, the last 1,000 pages was, here's the programming language. And it wasn't even BASIC or anything else. It was 6502 assembly language.
Oh, my God.
It's like, you know, it's like ones and zeros almost. You know, it's like hardly any sense to it. But I had such a drive to learn how to write video games. I said, you know what? I'm going to learn how these crazy machines
work. How old were you?
Oh, 15, 12, 13, yeah.
Uh-huh. That's so incredible.
And so, you know, some kids may be out there on the football team or whatever, but I don't know, maybe I was just too nerdy to get into those kinds of normal kid activities. But man, I was just digging through this programming stuff because I wanted to write video games. And I wrote a few, and they were fun, and I was really, you know, that really kind of fulfilled me. So, you know, fast forward to college, and I'm sitting there taking computer science 101 because I'm really into computers. And suddenly they're introducing me to concepts that I had sort of figured out myself years earlier. And I'm like, wow, you know what? The pace at which they're going here in college kind of really is not for me. So I guess what you could say, I'm a self-taught programmer.
Most really successful programmers and, you know, the Steve Jobs and all those guys, that's what they were.
Yeah, and you know, I think part of that is because you've got this mentality, this mindset of there's something I need to have. I need to possess this knowledge. I'm not going to wait for a college instructor to hand it to me as an assignment. I'm going to go get it right now.
So you're learning, you know, because it's interesting. My son is in college now, and he's, I think, 19. And he's learning different than I did. He's taking some of the same classes, and they teach this method. And I think to myself often that, you know, the key is as I'm an employer, sometimes I have to hire people who learned something, not who can do something. They need to understand that concept, because the concept is so important. And I always think that I watch the way he's learning now, and I'm like, man, I don't get it, you know. And so by self-taught, you get the concept. You're forced to get the concept, right?
Yeah, although, you know, I'd like to say self-taught computer programming isn't all perfect, because you interact in the real world with people who had the traditional college experience learning programming, and they'll use words, you know, from the textbooks and from the other professors.
Right.
They'll use words, and I'll be like, what's that? Man, I've never heard of that before. And then you come to find out it's something you've been doing for 10 years, and you do it every day. You just never called it that name.
That's funny.
Yeah, so yeah. There's a little bit of conflict there, and actually, let me just jump ahead and tell you, one of my sons is in college studying computer science, and I visited the school and I sat in on a couple lectures just to sort of get a sense of what it was like. And I'm like, wow, I wish schools like this existed back when I was doing it.
No, I agree with you that jump start, because there's so much, you know, I'm an accountant, and there's so much accounting that never gets used anymore,
right.
But I had to learn it, and it's not even fundamental. It's just, it was specific to whatever the law or the tax was or whatever. It's not relevant.
Right, right.
And so it was a big waste of time. So
yep.
I agree with you. It's so different today. They definitely get to the more focused stuff. So, okay.
Yeah,
let me get off on that. It's just interesting.
Right,
to me.
Sure.
Really
sure,
interesting.
Sure.
Okay, so take us through. So you're programming, you're building some things, you're a nerdy kid.
Yeah, and so, you know, I find myself in college and needing to, of course, you know, have some money coming in, because, you know, I've got a love interest in my life, and we want to go out on dates.
Oh, no.
Right? Sure.
That's the bad
sure.
sign. That's
sure. Yeah. No.
Sign.
No. So you know, I'm looking for cash, and I'm taking these side jobs, and then it hits me. You know, these people I'm working with, you know, as computer programmers, they've been to college, they've graduated from college, they've done the traditional route, they have the degree hanging on the wall, and I'm just coding right alongside them, and I'm just some self-taught guy who's kind of stumbling his way through college trying to figure it out.
So, hold on a second, I'm going to get this.
Yeah, sure.
So you're working in a job that probably had a barrier to entry. You had to have a college degree, right? That's what the HR would stop
right,
you.
Sure,
that was the
sure.
way they filtered at the door. But here, because you had the skill set, that wasn't really relevant, and that's what you figured out, that really isn't the key, right?
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
Right, yeah, exactly. And you know, a lot of times you might see on job listings today, requirements, blah, 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 degree, or equivalent experience.
Right.
And so that's kind of the thing that unlocks the door as a self-taught computer programmer, especially if you've got that go-getter attitude. Because if you get up off the couch and say, you know what, I'm going to learn this skill, you probably have the oomph, the drive to get up off the couch and say, you know what, I'm going to go get this job. And then when you present yourself to an employer and say, hey, I got the skills, I got the drive, I can do this job for you. And then they look at it and say, yeah, but you don't have that paper hanging up on the wall that says diploma. They're easy to look at. They're easy to forgive that and say, well, come on in, because I have this problem you need to solve for me.
Would you say, you know, it's interesting, because I always think about Chris Green when he said, you know, everybody buys my book. He said, I'll sell 100 books. He said, less than 10 will take action. Is that kind of the same thing? So the fact that you got up off the couch, you pushed yourself forward, and you were that guy, that's why you had the result? I mean, is that what you're saying? Same thing?
I think so. So, you know, now as I look, kind of I'm in the reverse, right? Because I look to people who can help me solve a problem, and I want to hire them and exchange money for their skills. And I think, you know what? I really don't care how you acquired your skills. I really don't care if it was sitting in a classroom listening to a professor or however you got them, right? In fact, I would be happy to hire you if one day you pushed a button and had the Matrix wall of guns come running in and it just injected knowledge right into your brain, for the folks who've seen that movie, you know?
Yeah,
right? So,
I get it.
So honestly, I don't care how you got the knowledge into your brain. What I really need to know are two things. One is that the knowledge is up in there, and more importantly, that you can bring it to bear to solve my problem.
Hmm. Yeah, you must have, though, had... Did you get to the point where you had the self-doubts, where you know, you're in the business world at that point back and then, and then you're seeing the guy with the computer degree next to you and you're thinking, oh man, you know, I wish I had what he had, even though you had the same skill sets and that. Did you ever get that self-doubt about yourself? And then how do you get past that?
A little bit at first, but then I thought, you know, let me kind of run through my head taking that model of stay in college, get a good grade, graduate the diploma, then get a job. I kind of run that scenario through my situation and I say, you know what, if I stopped the part-time work, you know, where I'm working with these people who have degrees already, and instead focus 100% on my studies and force myself to go through that path, 4 or 5 years from now, I'd kind of be right where I am right now, yeah, in the same job. The only difference would be having the paper on the wall. Now, I don't want to disparage anyone from thinking that going to college is not a good idea. It's fantastic. It's a great idea, and I'm glad I went. But having discovered a year or two in that it wasn't really for me and it wasn't really going to push my goals for myself forward, then I decided there's no harm in making a change.
You know, it's interesting because we both have kids in college, and so my son's in computer science. And I think, and I keep telling him, I'm like, buddy, you need to learn this skill set because an employer needs to know that you can solve a problem. You have to have that fundamental and you really need to apply yourself. But when you get out, don't be so quick to take a job. Take 10 jobs. You know, I'm encouraging him to think about being that, you know, that contractor where you kind of set your own freedom. And if they don't work out, you can fire them, you know,
mm-hmm.
because
right.
Let's face it, you know, you get 20 years into a career, it's very difficult to fire your employer because
right.
you built a life around that income and that steadiness. And it becomes uncomfortable. Today's day and age, that company might not exist in 3 years. And
right.
So to think that you're going to have a lifespan with them. So I'm trying to get them in that mindset. And I see more and more of that. So anyway, we're sidetracked.
But let's stay on that sidetrack for a minute. Because you know what's interesting to me is back in the day, it seemed to be that the company was interviewing the worker. Right, at the job interview. And now almost it seems like the worker has to do just as much interviewing of the company to see if it's a good fit.
That's a great point.
That is a
great point.
Yeah.
So, okay. So you're going forward and you're now figuring out what you're looking and you're saying, well, you know, I don't know if this is what I want to do. So
yeah, and you know, when you're at that age, in college age, you're sort of examining what's out there in the world, trying to discover what's there for you. And so I did a few part-time programming jobs, really love them. That's where I kind of gained the experience of, you know what, these are sort of what my peer group look like. And then for a while, I got a job at the mall selling software. And that was interesting because some of my other salesmen, you know, it's a great job and I love the people. But here I am selling the final product, but by night for a hobby, I'm building software. And so it was a fun mix. And then finally, I landed what at the time was my dream job, which was started working with the Peter Norton Group of Symantec, the people who make Norton Utilities.
Oh, yeah, wow.
Yeah, and so I went from having a part-time job around folks that were a great example of, you know, a certain degree of success to, like, working with the rock stars of the software industry. Because, wow, there were some people on my team that I just really, I felt like a roadie to their, you know, Rolling Stones or whatever.
So they were that great of a programmer. They knew, because you're talking mega algorithms, right?
Right.
Just try to stay ahead of a hacker and try to stay ahead of viruses and things like that, right?
Sure.
And fixing things, right? Norton Utilities was fixing things, right?
Yeah. And, you know, it was people that I knew before I worked around them from their reputations.
Like, oh, wow.
You know, people who had been in the industry for years and years and years. And now, like, I'm a few desks down. It just blew my mind, you know, what's possible in terms of, you know, if you can dream it, if you can visualize it, you know, look what's up. Unlimited possibilities.
The other thing you probably figured out is that, hey, that guy who you thought so much of was a little more of a, you probably came down to earth a little bit once you seen that they got crumbs on their face.
Yeah,
and they,
uh-huh,
you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
Cleaned off their desk. And so what you saw was the polished look out there in the real world. But then behind the scenes, you saw they're just a regular guy. Does that give you the ability to say, hey, if they can do it, I can do it?
Yeah, exactly right. And it humanizes the whole thing.
Yeah,
so
that's a good point.
You're in the elevator for a few minutes and you're like, realize, oh, you know, he forgot to pick up the milk on the way home because his wife's reminding him on the, you know, or whatever it is, right? And you're like, wow, he's kind of like me.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
A few years down the line, maybe a little more experience or whatever it is, but we're just all kind of in this together.
How long were you at that company?
Oh, you know, I don't really remember, but it was a good long time, 5 years, maybe seven.
Do you remember working on any of the really cool programs that, you know, some of them still exist? Exist, of course.
Yeah, sure.
But I mean, anything that sticks with you that you would say, like, hey, I had a piece of that.
Yeah, you know, actually, there's a few, like, about screens, and there's a few...
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and there's a few, like, little hidden Easter eggs where you can bring up the team photo, and I can be like, oh, there's my claim to fame. See the fourth guy over in the, you know...
You'd be like, hey, I did that.
Yeah, right,
know?
Sure,
hey,
sure.
You know, but you get a shirt done and stuff.
But, you know, no, there's a big sense of pride, especially in the... You know, back in those days, software was distributed in a store, mm-hmm. in a box, with a shrink wrap around it.
Oh, yeah.
And because there was no such thing as the internet back then, and boy, I remember when the internet happened, but because there was no such thing as the internet back then, you had 1 year update cycles, and so you would Norton Utilities version whatever, and then a whole year would go by, and then Norton Utilities version the next one, and it was just such a different like pace. And so by the time you put this big piece of work together, man, like an artist, you wanted to sign the corner of it because you're so proud. Nowadays you're blowing out updates to the website, you know, every day or whatever. You're like, come on.
But did you take your mom and dad in and say that and show them the box? I did that, you know. I mean,
yeah.
You know,
in the stores, definitely. Yeah. So you,
were they? What did they think about? You know, hey, well, I guess they must have knew that you were smart and you were into this stuff, you know, computer geek, right? What'd they say when you said, "Hey, I really don't want to stay in college anymore. I want to go chase my career because it's just you're not learning anything at
right,
that point."
Right.
Because there is, you probably did learn how to get along with others and how to, you know, follow some rules and stuff like that. That's the basic things you really do got to get from college. That's important.
Yep, sure.
So you probably got that. But the rest of it, you know, learning old programming styles and stuff like that when the world was changing so quickly and evolving, you wouldn't learn that in a classroom, right? You really had
right.
to learn it, especially if you had a place like Norton where you're learning. I mean, they were doing... I mean, I just can't imagine the stuff that never made it to market that they were working on, the Big Sky stuff back then, right?
Yeah.
The Blue Sky, I guess.
Right, sure. You know, you mentioned my parents, and my dad had already passed by then, but my mom was my number one biggest fan.
That's cool.
Oh, my goodness. She would remember stories about my childhood, but remember them all wrong, and she'd say, you were the perfect child. So I could never really, you know...
History's rewritten many
right,
times.
Sure. I could never really trust, and I put trust in air quotes, I could never really trust what my mom would tell me about my childhood. But, you know, that sort of my son can do no wrong that mothers seem to have about their children came through whenever I would tell her, you know, hey, I released a new version today of our software. She said, oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. That's fantastic.
She's telling her friends.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, he's a big boy.
Exactly, right. You know,
cutest baby.
But the thing about my mom is she comes back from the day where a good career path for you was to, like, find a job early and then work there for 50 years.
Yeah.
And so she would...
A pension.
Mm-hmm, exactly, yeah. So she would learn about my job changes. I'd be like, well, you know, I'm trying out this job for a while. It's working out great. She's like, well, but you've only been there 5 years.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, Mom, 5 years is a long time. You know, because her 50 is how long you work for a company.
That's funny. And, you know, imagine 5 years now versus 5 years
right.
then.
Right, yeah,
I mean,
sure.
It's night and day.
In fact, you know, the last day job I have, and I'll be happy to talk more about this later, but the last day job I had, day one, when I first got hired, I said, look, put an appointment on your calendar right now. Make an appointment for 5 years into the future. And if I'm still working for you, march right into my office and just fire me.
Oh, that's a great line.
Because I want you to know going in, I don't intend to be here for 5 years because the world changes so fast. Skill sets change, products change. And I'm not saying that I don't want your company to live for 5 years. It's just I want to come in, do what I can do, help change it, help improve your company with my skill set, and then probably it'll be time for me to move on.
It's actually a good line. What if somebody came into your company today and said that? Would you respect that?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so
yeah.
That's cool for you.
Yeah.
I wonder, you know, I can't imagine an HR department respecting that.
Right, sure.
You know, because they're so formal. Oh, you've got to come in and be here forever. Even though they have no clue that 2 years from now they'll be bought by somebody and their jobs will be eliminated or outsourced to,
right.
Philippines or wherever, you know. So.
Yeah, and you know, getting back to my relationship with my wife, I always tell people, look, you're going to have your wife a lot longer than you're going to have your job.
Yeah.
So, you know, put your priorities in order. But the thing of it is, you know, when Jennifer and I decided to make a relationship together, it's forever, right? This is something that we know is never, the context of the world is never going to change so much that we're not a good fit for each other.
That's cool.
However, when you start a job, you think, you know what? The world's changing. Jobs change, companies change, products change, everybody changes, right? It would seem silly to think that more than just a few years in, you would have the same kind of relationship with your employer that you did at the beginning.
Love it. Okay. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, I want to start talking about how you got into the sales world, right? So you're behind the scenes doing things. And I want to talk about how somebody, you know, usually a type A personality, right? Or type B, I guess they would be, you know, who just is so, you know, quiet, reserved, supposed to be, right? That's what computer people are. They you know, don't talk to people. And yet you're not. So there's clearly an opposite. So let's take a quick break.
Terrific.
All right, it's early in 2016. You just came off a slamming fourth quarter 2015. You're sitting on a boatload of cash and you're thinking, I want to do something for my business. I want to grow. Start looking at an end foundation. Look at them as building blocks. Build, build, build. Change your categories. Think about gated categories specifically, shoes and clothing. YourSourcedInventory.com, that's what they focus on. You'll get a list every single day of the week, Monday through Friday, and they're going to give you a leads for about 10 items that are in the shoes and clothing, and even dipping into the sports and outdoor category, which is great. These are all gated categories. Listen to some of these ranks. In October, the average shoe rank was $7,571 for $29 profit, a return of investment of 88%. December, 11,000 ranking, profit of $32, 83% ROI. Think about that. Profit of $32. What's your average selling price? Imagine what your average selling price would jump to. In clothing, ranking in October, $6,800, profit of $1,488. But listen to this, ROI of 109%. What could you do to get that 109% return? You got to join YourSourcedInventory.com. We use it as foundational in our business. We think you should too. YourSourcedInventory.com. This guy's great, isn't he? He's so entertaining. He is the life of the party, yet a computer nerd. His term, not mine. So in this segment, we're going to get into some real details about what Merchant Words is. A couple of real key highlights, 65 million search words, search phrases, and you could sort them, you can organize them. And the real deal here is he blew me away when he came in because I looked at the cost and I thought to myself, well, I could see that being an expense. I look at things annually. And then when he came in and said, Steve, I have a special offer. I created a landing page just for your podcast. It's a rate. Once they buy it, they have that rate for life, as long as they stay active, of course. But it's ridiculous. I can't believe that it's this low. I mean, it's silly. When you hear it, you're going to be blown away, but it's the real deal. And, you know, think about it. It's that silent employee in the corner that never takes a break, never takes a vacation. It enhances your chance to get in the buy box. That's it. Common sense. So let's get back into the podcast.
All right, we're back, and we're talking with George Lawrence from Merchant Words. And you know, I love the story because you are definitely not the atypical computer programmer.
Okay.
And so, you know, were you the life of the party at the computer nerds club at, you know, at these companies? Because, you know, I know I've seen some of the scenes where they tried to be cool and tried to be, but you are. So,
well, go on now.
That's a fit. That's a weird fit.
So, you know, the thing of it is my motto, or at least my internal conversation, is always like, if it's not fun, why bother? Right. But, you know, you got to make money. You got to figure out how to get, you know, make your way in the world. But you can have fun doing it. And I see people, especially like, for example, on the freeway. Right. And are we happy? You know, I look at people in the next car over and I'm just imagining, why are we doing this? What's the point? And I think, you know, a lot of people can be happy and be fulfilled and have a wonderful life and still have to go to a job every day. But it's really about attitude in my mind. So
yeah, I agree.
I forget what that line from Shakespeare is, like, nothing good or bad except the thinking make it so, or whatever. You know what I mean? So if you just adjust your attitude about what's happening, it doesn't, of course, change the actual physical circumstances of what's going on. But it seems to have a more enjoyable experience. So why wouldn't you choose a more enjoyable experience, right?
It's a perspective issue. I think absolutely. You know, you can come to a show like this, right? And you can go in there and say, oh man, I couldn't. It's funny. I've been out with, I don't know how many nights for different parties as you were at.
Sure,
Bunch
sure.
Of them too.
Yeah, yeah.
And some of the conversations I've had with people are, man, I found the best stuff. This is unbelievable. I made some great relationship, blah, blah, blah. And then some other people are like, man, I couldn't find a thing at this place.
Right,
and I'm
right.
Thinking to myself, you walk down the same aisle as that other person, your perspective needs a different view, right? You just need to look at it from a different point of view. I just don't understand sometimes, you know, and I think to myself, you know, maybe this isn't the right choice for people. So, okay. So you, at some point decided to start selling. How do you get from being a computer guy who's probably went late night and with that little light coding overnight and just pounding out, listening to music or whatever, to becoming a seller in some way?
Well, unlike the drive to create software, which has kind of always been there, as a kid with video games and as an adult with, like, can I build something useful that the world might find valuable, that's an internal drive that's always there. In the middle of the night, I wake up and go, I could write some software that does some really cool thing. But it's never been an internal drive of mine saying, I could go out there and pitch my product to people and hopefully get them to buy it. So that's never been something that's like...
So you're not writing software to sell in your mind. You were writing software that was cool or that did or solved a problem.
I wanted to will it into existence so that it could exist. Right?
Can you, let me ask you this, because I don't want to lose this thought because it's interesting. Do you see the software before you build it?
Well,
in your mind, I mean, can you actually like see what it does and then figure out how to build it? Is that, do you have that visual capability?
Yeah, let me explain it a little differently. So what rolls around in the back of my head is, what else could we do with this? And so I'm always thinking, you know, software is just bits and then electricity flowing around and stuff, but it produces such amazing results. And what else could we do? So I'm thinking, well, we've got a lot of data and databases. We've got a lot of, now with the internet, of course, it was a fantastic explosion of ideas. You can connect here and you can connect there and you can move data around. It's like, I feel like a guy who's staring at a pile of wood and hammers and nails and things. And I'm like, what do you do with all this?
Okay.
And the first thing you might do is like, I don't know, make a teepee or a very simple shelter or something. It's like, yeah, but couldn't we do a little more? What else could we do?
So you're not the guy looking at that log saying, I see a bear holding a fish coming out of a stream. You're the guy saying, hey, I got all this cool wood, I got all these cool tools, and I'm going to build something really cool, right? That, and they're two different people. And then there's a guy like me walking past, man, there's another log, get out of the way, right? So you have that creative side from that other, almost like a handyman. Are you a handyman in any way?
Yeah, I absolutely am.
So that skill set, yeah, that's interesting.
I love, you know, the first little house that we bought back in the day was just a little 600-square-foot bungalow. We barely fit into it. But, you know, there I was. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to build an addition onto my house. So I grabbed a shovel. I started digging the foundation. And my wife, Jennifer, bless her heart, she's like, you know, you're going to need professional help for some steps of this. And like, no, how hard could it be? You just lay down some rebar, you bend it around, you pour some cement, you put up some 2x4s. I've seen them do it. I know how to do it. And she's like, no, honey, please. When it comes to the foundation or the roof or something important, will you please just hire a professional?
So that is an art. You know, I mean, it's interesting. So I described the guy who sees the log and sees the bear, and we've all seen that on Facebook, where all of a sudden this log turns into this amazing thing. You're that other kind of artist that can build that stuff, and that you could have been an engineer, you could have been an architect, right? Probably all those different things, very similar skill sets. So very interesting.
And it's funny you mention that, because I thrill every time I see or drive over a bridge. And I know that's odd, right? And my wife will tell me I'm a little cuckoo, but we'll be in a new town and I'm like, oh, you know what? Over this river, they have this fantastic bridge. And let me tell you why. Because the way the architect built it was the struts and the support beams and the cables and blah, blah, blah. And then I'll go way out of my way just to drive over it, because I marvel at the idea that there's a guy somewhere who dreamed that up and said, you know what? We've been building bridges the same way since the Romans. What else could we do?
Right. We're back to that again.
Yeah.
What else could we do?
Yeah.
So what else could you do? So you're thinking, hey, you know, I'm writing this stuff. And then how do you get to start selling this stuff?
So selling kind of found me, as I was implying earlier. So the thing of it is you know, with a family and everything, you're always looking for ways to kind of like better your situation or make a more comfortable life for your family. So even though I'd always had great jobs for wonderful companies and I was truly fulfilled there, we always have little projects on the side to try to bring a little extra family income in. And one of the things we've been doing is always selling on eBay and Amazon. And we just love that, because you look around in your garage, and I overheard someone today saying, you know, the average person doesn't realize it. They probably have about $5,000 in their garage that they could flip right now on eBay, just sitting there.
Yep, just sitting there.
Yeah, and so I'd look at all this stuff. Either I bought it and never used it, or, you know, acquired it at a yard sale, whatever, right? And so I without realizing it, I was kind of arbitraging, you know, taking the stuff that I had acquired at one price and just not using it and getting rid of it. And you know, it brings in a nice pretty penny on the side, and I'm like, wow, this is great. And when the Amazon opportunity presented itself sort of as a supplement to or replacement for eBay, I'm like, well, you know, what else could we do? Is kind of what I was thinking.
So you were you merchant fulfilling back then?
Oh, yeah.
So you were in it before FBA really came along.
Yeah, right. And I have fond memories of saying, you know, wow, you know all that stuff that you wanted to like get rid of at a garage sale? Instead of the garage sale, I'm shipping it out, so help me wrap up these boxes. You know, as they like to say, I was touching tape all day. So help me wrap up these boxes. We'll take them down to the post office. And look, instead of making maybe $50 a yard sale, we made $500 by selling it to people.
And you didn't have to deal with an ignorant person and negotiate back and
forth
in an ugly way, right?
You know,
that kind of thing. You know, it's interesting to hear, as I sit and think about that, you know, you... You you as a programmer had to appreciate the eBay technology. Right?
Yeah,
I mean,
right,
that was there
sure.
before, you know, FBA.
Yeah, I know. I wished I'd thought of it.
Right. But it is pretty incredible. Actually, it's still running. It's probably just as old. You could have programmed it. They're still using the same thing, it seems, in some parts of it, because it's a weird piece of software.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's all those different pieces they put together. So you were there watching Amazon start from a different perspective than I would, right? You know, I was a buyer back then on
right,
Amazon.
Right.
You're looking at it as a programmer, a masterful... It must have been work of art.
Yeah, well, I was a buyer too. I love buying stuff on Amazon. I love the whole experience. But then I realized, you know, instead of just flipping things in the eBay model where you're auctioning or you set a price or whatever, I could become almost like a merchant. Wow, and I could still move things on Amazon just like
and
these other Amazon
this?
Merchants. Oh, gosh, you know, I don't remember the timeline exactly. I want to say 5 years ago-ish, maybe.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so 2010, 2011, okay.
Yeah.
So... Because we started on FBA around 2011. Mm-hmm. So we were one of the early adopters too. But back then it was books, like most people, you know, you move right into books, DVDs, CDs, that kind of thing.
Right, yeah.
And so you started merchant fulfilling on Amazon, and then you found the FBA, or you went right to FBA?
Well, no, the thing is, you know, Amazon for me, and I hope maybe let's set some expectations right now. I'm not a giant Amazon seller, have never been, and honestly right now I just don't have the time to be. So if folks are wanting to hear my story about what a fantastic volume of business I do in Amazon, I'm afraid they're going to be disappointed because I'm not a giant Amazon seller.
No, you're a seller. You have to keep a few accounts now. You have to keep a couple items out there. And, you know, I've heard this from... Scampower Group, the same thing. They have to have some products out there that sell because they have to see it all the way through. They have to understand how the system works because Amazon's going to change their algorithms
and
change their, you know, their interfaces. So you have to stay current to make sure your stuff still works. So I get it. And I think our listeners will get it too. But to me, the story is that you, from a programming view, saw the value and figured out these guys have figured something out.
Yeah, so here's how that story goes out. So, you know, we like going on family vacations like every family does, and we just needed to keep money coming in, a little fun money, my wife likes to call it. And we decided to just kind of up our game a little bit from eBay to Amazon and try to move more product. And it became clear to me right away that in order to really scale that business, to connect with as many people as we can, we got to figure out what they're looking for in the first place. Because we can go out and do clearance arbitraging, or we can discover... And, you know, by the way, let me go off on a quick tangent. My mother, bless her heart, used to do this all the time. Anyway, way before, you know, 20, 30 years ago, she'd come walking in the front door and she's like, oh, I found a clearance on shoes. Who do you know that's size 12?
That's funny.
I'm like, oh, Mom, why'd you do that? Now we got to find someone who's size 12.
Did she try to sell them to her, or she just gave them to
her? No, no. She'd give them away because she didn't really care about trying to squeeze a profit out of it. She just hated the fact that these shoes were a dollar and they were, you know, I got to find someone to fit them.
So that's a generational thing, right? She, you know, they would have to.
No, I wish she was alive today because she would love doing the retail arbitrage piece of
she
that.
She could appreciate that.
That would be fantastic.
Cool.
But yeah, no, so we were doing eBay and Amazon really just to bring in a little fun money, have a fun family vacation now and then and things. But like I said, I realized that I needed to connect with what people were looking for. And so I started wondering, you know, what else could we do? Could we figure out maybe by pulling some data off of the internet and maybe analyzing it, if we could kind of suss out the ways that people were searching for products? And I'm like, well, let me run some experiments and see. And then I'm like, oh, you know, I've got a database here, the result of some experiments that kind of informs me about the way people are searching for products.
Were you solving your own problem?
Exactly right.
And that's
exactly
what I always
right.
hear, that the success starts because you saw a problem, you figured out a way to fix it, and then you created a business. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I just wanted to make sure I understood that because I've seen that before.
That's exactly right. So I'm thinking, you know, if I really want to be successful moving product on Amazon, I got to figure out what people are searching for, but more importantly, how people search for it. Because as a merchant, I'm going to go ahead and create a listing, title, description, bullet points, all that, and then I've got search terms. Amazon's actually telling me, hey, stick in some words here, and if it matches up with what people are searching and how people search for it, then we'll put you on the results page. I'm like, oh, fantastic. That's exactly what I need. Now the only thing I got to do is figure out how people search for things. So, you know, if I'm selling doggy treats, that's one thing. Okay, sure, doggy treats. But what are all the other ways people search for it?
So did that come to you at some night? I mean, is that what the stuff that's mulling in the back of your brain where you're sitting there saying, aha, I mean, was there an aha moment?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
There was an aha moment.
There absolutely was. Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, and you know.
I hear this, and I've never met somebody who had an aha moment. Go ahead.
Oh, no.
Was it like the epiphany where the clouds opened up and all of a sudden the light shone down?
Well, I got to tell you, I was on the Los Angeles freeway system, so there was no clouds that opened up. Well, it could have been raining that day.
Do you actually remember the moment?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I was in my car driving along and sort of, not really, I wouldn't call it meditating, but you sort of think and, you know, ponder and you wonder what's, you know. And I come back to the same theme of like, what else is there? What else could I do? What could I be doing with my time? How can I improve the? And I was just sitting there thinking, you know, I got to solve this problem of if I buy a bunch of inventory and it doesn't move, is that because nobody's looking for it, or they're looking for it in a way that I'm not describing it, and so I'm just missing this connection? And that's the problem I was trying to solve. And all of a sudden I thought, you know what? I think I could tap into some sources in the internet and pull down the data, and it wouldn't really take much effort. And I thought, hey, I've got all the skills to make this happen. You know, when I go off on a quick tangent, you know, when you sit there and you say, you know, somebody ought to ...
Yeah.
And you
fill in the blank. How many things have you seen on TV? Like, I had that idea.
Yeah. But you know, you think to yourself, man, somebody really ought to make a tool that does X, Y, Z. And then you realize, hey, I'm somebody. I should be the guy that builds a tool to, but I was really only scratching my own itch.
Were you going back, though, to that when you, I mean, this is what I want to say, but this is a connection I can make. When you were sitting in that cubicle at Norton and you saw those programming gods two desks down, and then you were able to realize that they're no different than you, is that kind of the same connection that we can make here, that, hey, somebody ought to figure out, wait, whoever it is no better than me, and I just need to get my mind around that?
Yeah, you know, it's not so much that the people are just people and they put their pants on one leg at a time like everyone else does. It was more about the connection with the customers. I'm like, wow, even from the Norton days, I would say, okay, here's a couple of guys. They put together some software. We put it in on a floppy disk, put that in a box and shipped it out. And now millions of people get some value out of it. You know, wow, that's actually as simple as it gets. You know, it's testing and stuff, sure, but that's it. It's like a guy writes something, gets into a box, and a guy uses it. Benefit. Awesome. And I'm thinking, you know, now with the internet, of course, it goes a lot faster, but I'm thinking if those guys can write something good, stick it in a box and put it in front of somebody and gets benefit, why can't I write something good, stick it in a box?
And here you are, not a college graduate, right alongside of them, doing just the same thing. So clearly, that was a moment. So you have this moment in the car.
Yeah, right.
And I mean, what do you know, looking back at it, I mean, it's a defining moment in your life, right?
Uh-huh, right, sure.
I mean, really.
Sure. Well, you know, I had no idea then that it would become what it has become today, because really my only goal for it then was, could I produce a little bit of suggestions that would help me understand how people are shopping so I could sell more product on Amazon a little better?
Okay, so you figured that out in that car. I think of the Keith Urban song in the back of a cop car, right?
Yeah.
So you figured it out in this car going. And then, I mean, did your speed get faster on the highway? I mean, were you racing?
Probably.
Because you don't want to forget it, right?
No, probably. But you know what? The thing of it is, as soon as I get home, I flip open the laptop and I'm like, okay, I got to start coding this. And then as soon as the house is quiet and everyone's asleep, I'm like, all right, here we go, nonstop. And you know, by the next morning, I had a little teeny thing running that was starting to collect some data. And then a day later, I looked at it, I'm like, okay, wow, this is pretty interesting. I showed it to a couple friends who, you know, are Amazon sellers, and they're like, yeah, this is fantastic. I need this. I need this. Can I have this? I'm like, well, sure. Yeah, I'll be happy to share it with you. And then suddenly people are like, wow, this is fantastic. Keep it coming. You know, do this. Give me more suggestions on what I
should. So give me an example. So one of your friends who were Amazon sellers, they were moving product. They ran your stuff. They went out and modified their listing.
Mm-hmm.
Then they sell X more? I mean, what? Give me an example. I mean, did they see a little bit of an improvement, or a big improvement, or like a mega improvement?
So the early win, and you know, a lot of these people I don't know personally. I know them as, you know, online friendships and things. And so I would say, look, here's a database I've got, and I just made a little search interface to it so you could search through it, right? Because it produced millions of results. And I said, here's a little thing you can search through. Here's a URL. Come in, take a look at it, and then let me know what you think. And then I'd get the feedback of like, wow, this is fantastic. I'm not sure how I'm going to use it yet, but this is fantastic. But then a couple days later, it's like, you know what? I stuck some of these suggestions that your little database here had into my listing, and a product that had never sold.
What year was this?
Oh, this is 3 years ago.
So 2013.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So 2013, I mean, and thinking about it, they would have still been in the old Google search, right? I mean, or Amazon search, but I mean, either way, right? Mm-hmm. They still would have been in the old version before Google changed everything. You figured out a way, kind of to hack the system, to give an advantage because, again, people aren't searching for doggy treats. They're thinking for snacks for dogs or something silly like that,
or, right? Or even when they stay with doggy treats, they'll stick all kinds of other words around it. Healthy doggy treats, treats made in the USA, because a lot of people don't want to buy So who knows what's in the shopper's
and
mind.
So that's what your software was able to figure out that, or your database figured out that's what people were searching for when they searched for doggy treats. Mm-hmm. And so by adding those extra couple little doohickeys in there back then, you were able to get that. That's incredible.
That's right, yeah.
That's a cool story. And so they saw things sell that never sold all of a sudden, magic.
That's right. And, you know, the thing was, it's not like we manufactured demand for it. It's not like we created more people searching for it. People had always been searching for it. They were just searching for it with the phrases that merchants really wouldn't understand to describe their products.
Right. Men, women, right? Men, women speak, right? You can have the same conversation. Yeah, right. Men and women hear it the same, different way.
Well, in my experience, I don't really bump into men, women speak, but it's age, old and young.
Okay. Well, that's a safe thing to say. Yeah, right. No, to listen to this. I get that. But, you know, it's true, though. I get it. And so, you know, what's cool to me is that you really actually solved a problem for the customer, because they obviously weren't seeing all the options when they were searching for doggy treats, right? And now, all of a sudden, you expanded their ability to see things, because if that guy's stuff wasn't selling, that meant nobody saw it. Now, all of a sudden, people are seeing it. It sounds like you solved the customer problem, too.
Yeah, and you know, I like to say that we're all in this together, right? We're one big happy family. The seller, you know, the merchant, the buyer, everybody, we all want a better experience. And if I can help put the most appropriate product in front of someone searching for something that's maybe a little bit of a niche thing, then, you know, fantastic. We all win. And I found that the biggest disconnect is shoppers almost always bake in some kind of intended purpose or context into their searches, and then
go deeper
merchants,
on that. What does that mean?
I'll go deeper on that in just one second. But then merchants always have this idea of what are the different ways that I can describe the product. And so, let's say someone's shopping for a dress, right? They might say, okay, I need a white dress, but then they'll plug in things like I need a white dress for a wedding thing, or a quinceañera party, or I need a white dress for a birthday party. Well, the merchant doesn't really care what kind of party you're going to wear the dress to.
You need to be a woman who wants to wear a white dress. That's what they're thinking.
Right, and in the mind of a merchant, their job, their thinking, is to describe their product according to the physical properties of the product. And so the merchant will, and we're all guilty of this, selling on Amazon, they'll open up the box and take a look at the product, and they go, okay, what dress, white, 16 inches in high size, and the weight, fabric, and blah, blah, blah. And they're describing all the physical aspects and the property of the product. Now, that's perfectly appropriate, because
it's almost like an eBay. So, you know, as you're describing that, that's the exact way you would do it for an eBay sale. Right, that's the way you were trained. Anybody started on eBay, that sounds like that.
Yeah, yeah. Just so the merchants are dutifully describing the product as best they can according to the physical properties of the product. But then they don't really stop and say, but how are my customers, how are my buyers going to actually be looking for this kind of thing? And as it turns out, customers are saying, I need a white dress for a birthday party. And so the merchant doesn't think this would be perfect for a birthday party. But now some do, of course, and they realize that people, when they search for white dresses, might have a party in mind, so they'll try to work those keywords into their description or whatever. But I think in the end, it's not really about stuffing keywords or spamming or trying to do any kind of SEO inside of Amazon or eBay. In my mind, the way it works out for everybody is if you're describing your products appropriately, of course, because you don't want irrelevant keywords, but if you're describing your products appropriately, you make a better love connection, if you will, to people looking for those kinds of things.
Does merchant words, so thinking about that, let's just stay with the white dress. So it could be done for a myriad of reasons that somebody's searching for that white dress. Are you able to discern what the most type that people are looking for? So, you know, there are people looking for one to have a cocktail. Well, that's probably not even a good example. Something real far out there. Does your software allow that to kind of be pushed to the last part? Because the majority of people, Pareto, are searching for wedding, white dress,
right,
or
right,
what
right.
have you. Is that the way their software kind of works, or does it give you every option?
Yeah, no. So one of the challenges, and in fact, and I like to say this is kind of our secret sauce, is not so much in the collecting of the keyword itself, because that's, you know, it's a fairly straightforward programming
right.
task.
Scrape, boom.
Yep. Yeah. So that's really not that challenging. Although you'll be surprised, there actually are some challenges in dealing with a 40 million of anything is a lot.
It's a lot.
And so even though it's bits in a database, it's still a headache to make sure you manage all that correctly. However, the secret sauce of Merchant Words is we take all that data, all these keywords, everything we have in our database, but then we sort of reverse engineer what we believe is a fairly reasonable estimate of monthly search volume. So then the merchant can say, you know what, I want to focus on more of the more popular neighborhood of words. And then maybe if the merchant feels a little so inclined or has room for it in their listing, they can say, now I want to delve down a little bit further into the long tail and see how people are searching. And, you know, the merchant with the extra persistence to dig down into the long tail is often rewarded, because you'll have visibility. You'll have audience now with more shoppers. Because the more specific you're describing your keyword terms, the better able you are to match and appear higher in the search results in Amazon when people are doing those long tail searches.
So I'm thinking about this, right? So I'm thinking of an Easter dress, for example, right? So that white dress would be perfect for Easter, but it's not perfect in November for Easter.
Right.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So do you give us the ability to then, you know, look at trends by time period?
Yeah, and so we endeavor to keep the data as fresh as possible. We're not perfect in that aspect, but we're making good improvements. A new version of our software coming up will solve that and do fresh updates every day. But more importantly, what we're going to do is have seasonality data baked into
it. Yeah, that's what you want, right? Do you know of any companies, because I don't know that this career exists yet, so let's invent a career. Social media managers, right, or customer service people or whatever. What type of position would this be, where they're basically in charge of enhancing, getting that listing in front of the most eyeballs? What would that be? Have you met people that have that position out there in their company? And what would they call it? Because I've never heard of it. I can't think of what it would be.
So let me go off on a quick tangent, if you don't mind. You reminded me of a life moment I had a few months ago that really was memorable, and that is. I use services that make sure that as people mention Merchant Words out on the internet, that it alerts me so I can make sure that if there's a conversation that I should participate in, you know, I'm aware of it and I can jump in. And I saw that this little alerting mechanism said, hey, come check out this URL over here because you're being talked about. And I went over there, and it was a job search site. And someone had created a job listing that said, you know, wanted someone to help me manage my inventory. You must be able to use Excel on a computer and Windows, blah, blah, blah. And you must be able to use and understand Merchant Words. And I'm like, holy smokes, I made something that's now a job requirement.
A job requirement.
I'm a job requirement
now.
Wait,
you're the guy who said, I'm not going to be here in 5 years, and now you're helping me.
Yeah, now I create a job requirement. So, you know, honestly, I don't remember what the title of that position was called. But
what would it be? I mean, what would be... I mean, because, you know, as I sit here and I think about this, I interviewed Jeff Cohen, and I think about, you know, it's almost like the extra guy in the baseball field, right, or the extra man on the football field. That's what I saw, Feedback Genius. I mean, because it basically says, hey, you know, here's your business, it's doing really well, but if you want that buy box, which ultimately is what you want, this will help you get that without adding staff. You know what I mean? That, to me, is really cool. So Merchant Words is kind of the same thing, because you're saying, hey, Steve, your listing looks great, everything looks great, but, and you're getting some sales, but if you want to double your sales, triple your sales, just sell one more, or even get any sales, you really need to enhance that listing. It's almost like an enhancer position, and that's what your service offers, but somebody has to go and do the work, because there is work.
Right.
This
exactly.
isn't, you know, it doesn't magically, you know, sprinkle stuff over your computer and they just show up, right? You've
yep,
got to physically
yep.
go in. And when you get to a volume of SKUs, it's very difficult to manage. We all say, oh, we'll do it ourselves. Good luck. You run out of time. And
right,
I'm out
right.
of time. I'm out of time every single day. So
yep.
it's interesting.
You know, we talk to a lot of people and they always say, yeah, I understand what you do and that's fantastic and I need it, but when are you going to do it for me?
Yeah.
When are you going to connect to my listing and just put the right keywords in? And I think to myself, well, you know, would you really, like, would you subscribe to a service that did all of your investing for you?
Yeah.
Just automatically invested your money in whatever
blindly
company it thought.
Yeah.
I'm like, no. There's a little bit of human intuition. You still need to stay in the loop. But like I said, you know, the whole, the amount of time you spend versus the reward you get, you know, yeah, it's a little bit of time, but if you really want your product to connect with the most customers as possible, then it takes a little time.
So would you suggest a company consider that, you know, looking at taking, if they really want to take and get their, you know, there's a way to grow your business, add more SKUs, right? You know, we're at a show where you can go in there and there's, I forget how many hundreds of thousands of crap is for sale,
yep,
right?
Yep.
And to find the jewels in there is a lot of work and a lot of effort. The other thing you could do is just sell more of what you already sell. And that's probably a little easier, and it's probably the path to least resistance, right?
Sure.
So would you suggest that? I mean, and if so, what could somebody expect? I mean, do you have any history to say, hey, if somebody starts using Merchant Words, and I know there's no guarantees, but if they actually start using Merchant Words and really using it and going into a listing and modifying that listing over time, have you seen any pattern of what somebody could reasonably expect in sales growth?
Yeah, absolutely. But let me back up, if you don't mind, just for a second. You go back to the analogy of a pile of logs in the middle of the forest, right?
Okay.
So someone might take that and say, you know what, I'm going to lean these together in a little teeny pyramid shape, and I'm just going to sleep under there, and that's going to be great. Then I think, you know what, as a merchant, could you do better for your business? So to overuse the analogy, what if you took those logs, sliced them out into nice little squares, and then you built them this way and that way, and now boom, you've got a house. Yeah, a lot better than your little, you know,
better than
right?
Lots,
yeah. So with a little more effort, you can get a lot better results. And that's the same thing I think of when it comes to, like, you know, what could I do with my listings? Can I improve my listings somehow? And a lot of people think, well, I got to have great photography, I've got to have a nice title, I've got to have these bullet points that make sense, and that's all true. You need all of that stuff. But if your listing is not visible to your customers, that's kind of like secondary, if you will. So I think, and I think you even kind of implied that you could take an existing listing and make it better by using Merchant Words. And of course, that's true. However, I almost kind of look at it as the first thing you want to do as you're creating your listing is make sure your keywords are correct, because if you're not visible, all that other stuff you're going to worry about is not going to really apply. Once you're visible, once people are on your listing, then you need to worry about making sure the photography is right, make sure that people trust you with the right clicks because your titles and bullet points
are great.
Okay, so
you're saying that really this is even more fundamental, because no matter what, you could have all that other stuff and nobody's going to see it. It's worthless. You want to be seen, even if you're not the best image and you're not the best, at least you're in the running,
right,
is what you're saying.
Exactly. What I like to say is, even if you have, let's say you're out fishing, if you had the best equipment, the best training, the best everything, right, and you drop your line into a pond that's got no fish in it, you're going nowhere. So the first problem you got to solve is, where are the fish?
Yeah, right.
Once you solve that problem, then sure, come with the best equipment. But in fact, even if you don't have the best equipment, the real decision is, where are the fish? Once you solve that problem, the secondary decision is, am I using the right equipment?
Okay. And I think that makes perfect sense. That's a great analogy. So what do you do when you're sitting on a couple hundred SKUs, or in some of us, 8,000 SKUs, and you're saying to yourself, oh my God, where do I start?
Right.
I mean, how do you handle that? I mean, do you go and look at your best-selling items and try to sell more of them, or do you go to your non-selling items and try to sell more?
Well, this is going to sound like a non-answer, but I say both. In fact, you know, and let me just be clear. It's not really about, hey, you got to buy Merchant Words, you got to buy Merchant Words. You can stop and think about a great set of buyer-oriented keywords using any method, right? You can go into a store and eavesdrop on how people are shopping and how they talk to the customer service guy. Will you help me find this because I'm looking for that? You'd be like, oh, that's how they talk about their thing. So let me just be clear that what I want everyone to do and all your listeners to do is think about the kind of words that shoppers are using when they shop. Now, of course, naturally, Merchant Words will help you find those, but if you discover them in other channels, terrific. But once you have these words, then you can apply them to the listings that aren't going anywhere right now.
Okay.
As easily as you can apply them to the listings that maybe have traction and some good volume. So I would say, you probably, to just sort of prove the point that this exercise is worth it, start off with the listings that don't move right now. Either you've never sold a single one, or you're not selling as many as you'd like, and then plug them in, because we've heard success stories over and over from people who they'll come running up to me at a trade show or whatever, and they'll say, look, I heard you speak on the first day of this trade show, now it's the second day, I gotta tell you what happened to me last night. And I'm like, oh great, I hope like your website blew up, and you know, I don't know he's gonna tell me, right? But invariably what they'll say is, I got some of your suggestions, I applied them to a listing I've never sold a single one of, and I sold two of them this morning, so thank you very much. And I'm like, wow, could you say that a little louder, please? Yes,
could you tell your friends, call your mother, have her put it out there.
Yeah, so great success stories often come when you apply keyword intelligence to listings that just really aren't moving anywhere, because it's easy to see the delta. You know, before the keywords, nothing. After the keywords, I've sold a few.
You know, and it goes back to, again, though, how many people do you talk to that don't take action? So as you're describing, even if you go in and fix a few listings, you're taking action. You're now 90% ahead of everybody else, because we already said that less than 10 are going to take action out of 100.
Right, right.
So just going in and doing a few things, you're going to have activity because nobody else is going to do it.
Right. You know, I was yesterday I was speaking in a room, maybe 100, 200 people, I don't remember exactly, and I said, how many people have listings out there on Amazon? And a lot of hands went up, most everyone. And I said, how many people, and go ahead and be honest, how many people have listings that they have never touched or added keywords at all, search terms, and the search term fields are currently blank in your listings? And I was shocked. Maybe I shouldn't have been shocked. Maybe I should have expected it, but I was shocked to see that almost all the hands went up again. And so it's like merchants start off with, and I understand the time constraints. You can't spend an hour tweaking every listing because you might have 1,000 of them. But the point is, if you leave all of those search terms blank in your listing, you're basically saying to Amazon, hey, I don't really care if I match with anyone that much, and so I'm not going to help your searching algorithm, your matching algorithm, match my product up with searchers. So good luck, Amazon. I hope we make a connection every now and then, but I'm not going to give you any help. Why wouldn't you want to say, hey, Amazon, here's everything your algorithm needs to know to try to match with as many shoppers as possible, because I want to tell you everything about the kind of product I am.
You have the best chance. You know, it's interesting. So, no, most people would be like, oh, I got to go find more product. I got to go search more product. My sales are slowing down. I just got to go find more product. Really, the answer is you want to give your product every chance to sell before you go find more product, because quite frankly, you might not need more product. You might have enough product. You just need to get selling what you have.
Yeah,
so I think that's very rational.
So, you know, right here today, we're in Los Angeles. And if I were to drive...
We're in Las Vegas.
Sorry, I apologize. I'm from Los Angeles. So yeah.
If I'm in Los Angeles, yeah. We got a problem.
No, my brain got miswired. So we're in Las Vegas. If I drive an hour in that way out into the desert, I will be surrounded by a bunch of hot desert weather. And that seems like a perfect place to open up a lemonade stand, right? Because it's hot and it's sweaty. And anyone there would have... Of course, buy my lemonade, because it's a desert, right? Except I've got no customers out there. And so if I'm sitting there and I open up my lemonade stand and I'm 50 miles away from the nearest person in the middle of the desert, it's not that I picked the wrong location because it's not hot. It's hot. It's a perfect place to sell lemonade. And it's not that because maybe my lemonade's too sweet or not sweet enough, or maybe I need to adjust the price. The price go up, price go down. Oh, is the product, the picture of my lemonade not correct? Is my marketing wrong? He's like, no, you're just selling lemonade in the wrong spot, man. Get to where the people are. So, yeah, I would say instead of rolling out different flavors of lemonade in your stand, instead of different, oh, maybe I should add, mint to my, forget that. Find the people. Find the people and then start selling them your lemonade.
How long does it take for someone to update a listing? What's your experience?
Well, it depends on how, some people want to just... Let me answer it a different way. If you're currently staring at a listing with no search terms, I would say going from no search terms in your listing to some search terms in your listing.
And what's some? What's ideal?
Well, it depends. You have 1,000 characters, and Amazon changes the rules all the time. Maybe by the time some of your listeners listen to this, they've changed the rules again. But currently today, you have 1,000 characters of search term data. That's probably, 200 words or so?
Okay.
And you're allowed to plug in as many as you like, up to that limit. However... Oddly, Amazon and Seller Central presents that 1,000 characters as 5 individual boxes. And also, very oddly, you can either put in 200 characters in each box or 1,000 characters in the first box and 0 in the rest. It's kind of oddball. But hey, Amazon's going to do what Amazon's going to do.
Right.
So who are we to figure that out? Anyway, the point is, if you have less than 1,000 characters, or even worse, if you have no characters of any data, you should get at least something in there. So plug in your best keywords just off the top of your head, if nothing else.
So what would that be? How many? Give me. I'm looking. I'm gonna nail you down. You're gonna say, Steve, 3, 6, 10, 20, 30 words. Ideal?
Look, you got 5 boxes, and right now, if you have no search terms at all,
right.
Please,
so 0 is not ideal.
Zero is not, and please just promise me you're going to toss in at least something in each of those 5 boxes. Just go boom, 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 then move on with your day. You've gone from worst possible scenario to better.
Okay.
That's good. And then if you want to spend a little more time, as I would encourage you to, or hire a VA if it's important, listing that you need to make sure you're optimizing, or however it is your business works, then I would encourage you to keep researching the right keywords until you approach your 1,000 character limit. Because
So you're suggesting almost 200 words?
Yeah, well, when they're relevant. So I don't want you to...
Right, no, I get it.
Yeah.
But I mean, ideally, you're saying go all in. If you're going to go all in and you're going to fix a listing, find the best, find as much as you can, and try to take advantage of that one listing. Is that the way you would tackle somebody who has 500 SKUs, one by one? Or would you suggest, you know, putting in 10 in each and just blowing through 10 a day until they get through them all and then coming back? My bet is they never would come back.
So imagine the Amazon matching algorithm was a person, and he shows up at your warehouse one day, and he's like, "Hi, my name's Bob, I'm from Amazon, and I'm here to help you connect with more customers." You're like, "Fantastic, Bob, come on in." You wouldn't say, you know, "Never mind, I'm good, go away." And so now Bob's standing there in your warehouse, and Bob would say, "Okay, now, which one of these boxes here would you like to connect with more customers?" Well, decide which one you're going to like.
I want them all. Uh-huh.
Yeah, right, sure. You're gonna, right. But if Bob was standing there, you probably have in mind a couple of products you'd really like to talk to him about. You'd probably say, "Oh, well, you know what? I got so many of these in inventory. I'm not moving very many. I'd really like to move these for whatever reason." And it doesn't matter what the reason is. I got a bet with my friend that I can't sell one of these, and I really want to win that bet, so I got to sell one of these. Whatever the reason is, because of the inventory levels or
So it could be inventory levels, which I think makes a lot of sense. It could be dollars that you have invested. Length of time you've had the inventory, those probably are the key metrics to get moving as fast as you can.
Yeah, and everybody's got different points of pain. Maybe it's because the thing is just so big, you don't want it taking up space in your warehouse. Maybe it's because it's just got such a high margin, you're sitting on so much potential that you're not realizing yet. And so whatever your points of pain are...
Or it's going to get outdated.
Yeah, right.
So you got to move it faster.
Right, Q4 is coming and, man, you've got Christmas trees or some Halloween thing. You've just got to move it. So whatever your point of pain is, chances are, I'm willing to bet that if Bob, the Amazon employee, was standing in your warehouse and he said, "Which of these products would you like me to help you move more of?" You would have an easy time trying to steer Bob in the right direction to a couple of products.
Oh, I love it.
And then the next thing you'd say is Bob would say, "Okay, now tell me what searches you would like to have your product appear on." And you'd be like, "Well, I'd love to be on page one of Doggy Treats." And Bob would say, "Well, you know, there's a lot of other people who want to be on page one of Doggy Treats. Would you like to be on the page one of anything else?" And then you could be like, "Well, I'd love to be on the page one of Healthy Doggy Treats or Organic Doggy Treats or Doggy Treats Made in the USA." And so you throw out three things and Bob says, "All right, thanks. I'll see what I can do about those." And then he goes with his pen ready, "Any others?" You wouldn't go, "Nah, I'm good. Just put me on those three pages and that would be fine." You'd be like, "Oh, yeah, get me on as many pages. Wait, sit down a minute. Here. Get comfortable because I got about 20 other pages I want to be on."
And that's where you would have that guy working in the corner called Merchant Words. And you would say, "Hey, give me some more. Bob's sitting here.
Give me some more terms. Right.
I mean, that's really where the analogy really, I mean, if you think about that picture, that's that silent guy, you know, again, as I talk about feedback genius, the same concept. You got that silent guy that's not on payroll, not on staff, and he's sitting there churning this stuff out for you.
Yep.
To me, that's genius because otherwise you, single seller, has to come up with everything. I'm limited. I know you think I'm a genius and I'm, you know, something special, but I'm actually limited in my thought. And so, you know, the problem is I can only think of so many things, and that's probably my perspective, right? The things that I've experienced in life and heard about or whatever, where you're saying, "Well, I'm giving you everybody else's perspective." And I think that's the value of Merchant Words.
Yeah, exactly.
You're giving the value of everybody else's perspective. And here's the majority of them. You know, they seem to be a pattern, and this seems to be the pattern.
Yeah.
And I think as a man, especially an older man, it's very difficult, you know, especially to keep up with current stuff because I have no clue a lot of this stuff. And so I can see the value. You know, it's what interests me about... You have 20 million Amazon keywords. Is it a database or is it a website? Tell me how it works.
Well, I want to clarify that. When we started, we discovered 20 million keywords.
Okay.
Then a few months later, we discovered that we had 40 million keywords.
Oh, geez.
Because, you know, because we're adding new ones every day, but it never bothered to, like, go check on the count. Right? And then I checked a few months later, 40 million keywords. The most recent data set that we've collected has 65 million keywords in it.
Are you kidding me?
And the crazy thing is, we do the math on that, and you're like, you know what? For 1 month to the next, we advance so many millions. That's like 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 a day. Now, I've taken a look at the data, what appears new every day that we didn't discover, you know, yesterday, and it's long-tail stuff. It's never going to be like, you know, Doggy Treats suddenly popped into existence today. That's always been around. But the way people search for stuff, like one day Doggy Treats suddenly is like, boom, Organic Doggy Treats.
Organic wasn't around very long.
And then like Doggy Treats Made in the USA, boom, suddenly that became a thing that people started adding to their searches. So it just blows me away that every single day, thousands of new keywords are searched for that never existed before as a search term.
So how do I get this stuff? So I understand, and at this point, which is going to be very cool, but it's $30 a month for a pro service. That's your general, that's where most people take, right? That's standard measure, right?
Yep.
So for $30 a month, you're going to give me now 65 million search words. How do I get it? So I sign into your website and I download a file, or walk me through that.
Well, you search interactively through our database, right?
Okay.
And so, let's take the
doctor. So I sign into your database.
Right. Okay. So you sign up, you pay us a few, you give us your credit card, you sign up, and we're a monthly subscription. And then what you do is you start off with a search term into our database of search terms. I know that seems a little meta, right?
But so I'm in there searching for doggy treats.
Yeah, exactly. So you'd log into Merchant Words, you search for doggy treats, and then we'll show you like 5,000 different variations, and it blows me away that there's that many variations.
Wow.
We'll show you 5,000 different variations of how people search for doggy treats. And I'm like, you know, there's some that are obvious, right? We mentioned a few. Doggy treats organic, made in the USA, etc.
But are you going to rank them then and say, Steve, this is the top one?
Yeah, so you can sort them by, you know, alphabetical, which of course doesn't make sense for most people. Most people want to sort it by highest search volume.
Right.
And that's estimated, of course, because, you know, Amazon doesn't publish that. But you can sort it by estimated search volume and then go from there, man. Whatever you're going to do with it, man, do with it. We make it easier for you to try to get it down in a format that you can do something else with. So you can click on a button and download it as a CSV file. A CSV file, as probably everybody knows, is just a text file that's formatted in a way that's easy to bring into Excel or some other spreadsheet. And you can copy and paste right off the website if you want to, but download the spreadsheet and start going through it, research it, do whatever you need
to
do.
So you can actually copy and paste. So in my scenario where I wanted to get, you know, five a day, I'm a goal-oriented guy, so I would sit there and say, I'm going to fix five listings a day based on inventory volume, investment I have, length of time it's been sitting in my thing, it's coming up, long-term storage fees, whatever it is,
yep.
Or expiration date's coming, right? Easter, you know, get your candy out. So I can literally have two screens open, and I could sit there and say, okay, these are the top ones as I'm putting in my, you know, Halloween, or we'll stay with doggy treats, just stay with that. Boom, I can copy those, paste it into Amazon, comma, paste it in, comma, paste it in, comma, paste it in, comma. So that really, again, is the efficiency issue, right? So you can scale that. I mean, that sounds like, you know, 10 listings a day.
Yeah,
and you know, it doesn't take long to get through a lot of listings.
And people say to us, well, why can't you just do that for me? And
right.
You know, the technology exists where we could log into your account and we could start stuffing keywords in there for you, but that wouldn't be optimal. What you need to do is bring some human intuition to bear. So as you're going down the list, please just don't take the top five and paste them in there, because chances are they might not be appropriate for your listing, or they might be someone else's brand, because a lot of people do search with brands connected
sure.
to a keyword. And so if you're not selling that brand, it doesn't seem germane to
and
actually
you don't have a way
to
filter that out, because you wouldn't know that, right?
Yeah, so. And in fact, that's the benefit of Merchant Words, is we don't filter those variations out on purpose, because we want to present them to you. So if you're having dinner at a restaurant, right, there's maybe 20 items on the menu, nobody expects you to eat 20 entrees, but they still want you to see your 20 choices.
Okay.
So that's the same thing, is we're presenting
great.
You with a menu of keywords, and we want you to go down the list and find what you like for your particular taste and plug it in.
All right, perfect. I love it. Okay, so we already said it's $30 a month. However, George is very generous, and so he said, this was very cool when he got here, he said, Steve, I created a landing page for you, and I'm going to allow your listeners,
yep,
my valued listeners, this is how valuable you are, because I'm signing up right as soon as we're done, to get a price, and you said in perpetuity. So
that's right. That's
it's
right.
Normally $30 a month,
uh-huh.
And at $30 a month, you're saying to yourself, for $30, I got a guy sitting in the corner now who's going to help figure that stuff out. I don't have to do all the work. Huge. You're saying, if for me and my listeners, we can do it for how much?
$9.
$9 a month, and it's month to month, right? So
uh-huh,
I can stop
right.
at any time.
Yep.
So my big investment to try it is $9.
That's right.
And I get to try it, and your perfect example is take a listing that ain't selling, right? And just put it on there, go in there, spend a few moments, go through, update the listing, and see what happens. See how quickly you can make your $9. If you don't make your $9, you got $9 spent and a little bit of time, and life moves on. However, you start to see a result. Yeah, $9. I mean, it's nothing. I mean,
right,
you know,
right.
So I mean, it's really nothing. It's kind of a little low. But you said that will be my rate perpetuity.
That's right. And you know, part of it is I can't stand those offers that the phone company or the cable company dangle in front of you. Hey, look, try our service out for $10 a month, and then the fine print says, oh, and if you turn out that you like us, it's really going to revert to $100 a month. I hate that stuff. So we're a small business. We love helping people. We love having merchants connect with more customers. It thrills me to be able to offer a service that's helpful. And it also thrills me to be able to extend a great offer to your listeners. So if you love us, $9 is really all we want you to ever pay us, and we're never going to raise a price on you. And if you don't love us, we'll be happy to cancel you. There's no commitment. There's no any kind of obligation.
So that link is going to be out on my website, E-Commerce Momentum, in this episode. But again, think about this. So you get now that employee working for $9. I mean, that's I don't even know if that's going to meet the federal
wage laws. Yeah, that's right.
Well, no,
should we raise the price of the minimum wage?
I think, again, you can grow your business. So I'm at this conference, and we found a whole bunch of wholesalers. We're going to buy a lot more product. Or I could take the 8,000 SKUs we have, and I could sell them. And I kind of want to do both, you know.
Right,
and so
true.
For me, you know, you have to invest. And so for $9, it's not an investment. It's a non-decision. And I really suggest it. And I really think that this should take you to the next level. And if you don't, it's $9. You wasted. Okay, move on. Right? And that just doesn't fit. George, how can people find more about you and how do they connect with you? I'm going to have a link and I'm going to have all that information, but you're everywhere. I mean, you're not hiding under a rock. People can actually reach out to you and talk with you.
Oh, of course. You know, if you ever meet me in person, and I would love to have your listeners meet me in person. I'm at many different trade shows and things. I hand out my business card, which has my cell phone number on it. And I thought for about a half a second when I printed up my business cards if that would be a good thing or a bad thing. And I said, you know what? I don't care because I like talking to people. And if I'm busy, I just won't pick up the phone. And I've gotten texts in the middle of the night before, and I wake up the next morning, and I'll be like, hey, I'm so glad you reached out to me. Sorry you're having a problem. Let me help you with that. Or I'm so glad you have a question. Let me answer that for you. But if you don't meet me in person, and if you don't get my business card and shake my hand, which is the best way I'd love to connect with you guys, I would also like to remind you that if you go to any page at Merchant Words, at the very bottom is contact information on how to get in touch with us. You can call our business line. You can send us an email. It all comes right to me eventually.
Okay, and I have contact@merchantwords.com, and you have your phone number there. And I'll have links to all that. You know, I love it. I'm a customer now for life. $9. I mean, think about that. $9. I love it. Oh, you made my day. How do you stay motivated and focused? You know, because you got a lot going on. I mean, you really have a lot going on. You got 65 million things going on.
Right.
You're
right.
3,000 a day or
right,
whatever
right.
you said every month. I'm blown away with that. How do you personally stay focused? What keeps you grounded? How do you pull yourself back from all this? Because your mind must just race with this stuff.
Yeah. So, you know, for me, it's about family. And the whole reason I got into this in the first place was because I wanted to help a little side business become more successful so that I could have the freedom of having more and better family vacations. Really. And then, so for me, I kind of look back at the roots of why I got into Amazon selling in the first place and why I kind of gave rise to Merchant Words is I wanted to spend more time with my family on family vacations. And I go way out of my way to make sure that my wife and I spend a lot of time together and we enjoy activities together. And, of course, my kids, now that they're all grown, many of them have moved out and doing their own things. But we get together frequently over Christmas and family reunions and things. And that's what keeps me grounded, is staying connected to my family.
And this business allows you that. Man, I just love it. I certainly appreciate you taking the time. I mean, you're a busy guy, and you've taken and given us an hour. And you've given us more ways to grow our business. And again, you know, as you say, to focus on family and to get that, you know, to take back some of that time. And I just really appreciate that. I thank you so much. I wish you nothing but success this year, next year, and I can't wait to see you at the next show.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. He is the real deal. He is so, so approachable. You know, kind of like the last couple interviews, just very approachable people who are real, who want to help you grow your business. And, you know, you see this man, go up and talk to him, you know, and just spend a few minutes with him, and he will help you in ways that you didn't even think you needed help. So I hope you enjoyed it. ecommercemomentum.com. Check it out. Hit link for his link for Merchant Words is there. It's a great deal. You're not going to get that price anywhere else. It's incredible. I'm signing up. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.